Oh, got it! Got it! Got it! 33!
Oh, wow. Where did that one go?
Come on. Did you see Justin Upton? He had his hands on his head, Macaulay Culkin style from Home Alone. Like, I can't believe what I just saw.
Oh, man.
463 feet. Get ready, Denver. Get ready, Home Run Derby.
America was not ready for the power of Shohei Ohtani. Because, yeah, Major League Baseball knew he might be a unicorn, the first player in a century who could pitch and hit full-time. But this season, it turns out, Ohtani's bat is the single greatest attraction in the sport. So today, ahead of tonight's Home Run Derby and tomorrow's All-Star Game, we take a tape measure to the power of Shohei Ohtani and the glory. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, July 12th. This is ESPN Daily. Alton Gonzalez, where are you right now?
I am in Denver, Colorado, Pablo, just a few blocks away from Coors Field, where all the action is about to happen.
Alden Gonzalez covers the Angels for ESPN, and this is the third time he's come on the show to talk about Shohei Ohtani. Yeah, I mean, look, I'm going to be honest with you. We were talking today on the precipice of the Home Run Derby. The Derby's at 8 o'clock Eastern on ESPN. I'm going to be honest about the fact that I don't really care about the Home Run Derby historically. It's always been a little gratuitous. It's always kind of like, yeah, I get it. Yeah, I mean, home runs. But this one, man, I don't know if I've been as excited for an exhibition of anything before as a sports fan in my life.
Yeah, Pablo, that is the sentiment that is shared by not only casual baseball fans, but I think a lot of people in this country, around the world, especially in Japan. That's the sentiment shared by people who are ardent followers of the sport. And it's all because of Shohei Ohtani, who has shown us this year that he transcends through all of that because of what he's doing, because of how interesting it is, and more relevant to this present conversation, because his power is just unreal. It's one of those things that you have to see for yourself. And thankfully, he accepted the invitation to take part in the Home Run Derby. I think it's as excited as people have been to watch a singular participant as far back as I can remember.
Yeah. And look, we talked about Shohei back in May, but there is an element of, wait a minute, I don't know if we've seen a hitter, just talking about power, as prodigious as this human being, which is not the thing that I necessarily was ready to declare as of May of this year. But how would you describe what we've seen from him since we last talked?
It's amazing, Pablo, just spending these last few weeks talking to people about specifically just Shohei Ohtani's power. For a story on him, it's just this look of wonder that you get from people, and people who really don't speak in declarative sentences, saying things that just you wouldn't expect them to. I mean, look, I spoke to this man named Paul Sorrento. He's one of the hitting coaches for the Angels. This man played into the late 1990s with Alex Rodriguez and Ken Griffey Jr. and Manny Ramirez and Albert Bell, like all these prodigious sluggers. He said about Shohei Ohtani, "I've never seen this." Okay? Cole Calhoun played with Mike Trout for a long time, really close friend of his. He says, "It's the most power I've ever seen." Mike Trout himself, the other day, referencing Giancarlo Stanton, Aaron Judge, the titanic home run hitters of this era, he said, "Shohei is just different." And the one thing that everybody can't stop talking about is just how epic his on-field batting practice is.
Well, let's get to the batting practice thing, because yes, we know by now, if you've, you know, been hibernating, let me catch you up on what Shohei has been doing on the field itself, because he's been leading the league in home runs. He has more than Aaron Judge, more than Pete Alonso, more than both juniors, Fernando and Vlad. Like, that stuff we've seen the video of. But How would you describe what batting practice is like for this guy?
Well, Pablo, I could tell you that basically anybody that you speak to about Shohei Ohtani has like one BP moment that resonates with them. And I got so many of these stories over the course of these last few weeks. I'll give you some quick examples. You remember the 2002 World Series when Barry Bonds hit this mammoth home run to right field where it seemed as if like everybody just stopped, everybody's jaw had dropped.
Ripped into right field. It's a one-run game as Bonds gets his second of the series. You can see Salmon saying in the dugout, that's the furthest ball I've ever seen hit.
It went deep into the tunnel of that first section of seats in deep, deep right field.
Yes.
Shohei Ohtani does that routinely during Angel Stadium batting practice. People talk about how he has cleared center field batters' eyes with ease in these gigantic ballparks. The Rangers' new one in Arlington, Oakland's ballpark, which is mammoth. The one at Target Field in Minneapolis, people have stories about that. But the one home run that everybody references, especially people who were on the Angels at that point, came right here. It came in Coors Field. It was May 8th, 2018. Shohei Ohtani was barely into his second month as a major league player. And there was still some doubt about who he was, what he was going to be. Is he really as special as people say he is? And on this afternoon, at Coors Field, where the ball traditionally flies like no place else, he hit this ball, Pablo. And it was his towering drive to right center field. It cleared the bullpens. It cleared the first section of seats, then the second section of seats, then the third section of seats. And it banged onto this railing that lines the rooftop section at Coors Field. And I wish the audience had a visual for this, because you look at it and it's like there's no way a baseball could reach up there. And a lot of the people who are anticipating Shohei Ohtani in this home run derby, they think about how those balls for the home run derby are going to be very tightly wound. They're going to fly. They think about how they're not going to use the humidor for those balls. And they're like, not only should Shohei Ohtani be the favorite to win this thing, but they wonder if he might hit baseballs that will leave the stadium entirely.
So you mentioned the deactivation of the humidor, and that device, to be clear, Alden, is one that baseball installed specifically because of the altitude at Coors Field. And on a normal game day, they keep all the baseballs inside of this thing, and the extra moisture that builds up is meant to weigh down the baseball.
It acts the same way that a humidor would act where you're storing your cigars, only it's a lot bigger. It looks like this gigantic refrigerator that you would find in a restaurant, except what's in it is shelves with boxes of baseballs. And then when they're ready, they're taken out of there and they're used in the field of play. To sort of normalize Coors Field, which sits at mile-high altitude, the air is very thin, the ball flies really easily. And I think that's the fascinating thing about this home run derby is we're not going to have that humidor. I don't know that we've seen Coors Field without the humidor in quite a while. And so we might see like really jacked up 1998 style baseball. Yes. At this home run derby. And if it weren't a timed event, Pablo, it might last 8 hours.
I mean, that's the dream. Like, that is what this entire show is about. It's, can he do things that Barry Bonds, Manny Ramirez, Alex Rodriguez, Babe Ruth have never done in the very micro sense? Like, get this ball out of the bleeping stadium.
There's a reason why there are dozens of Japanese media members who come out here and follow him intently every pitch, every plate appearance here in the United States. And it's because out there in Japan, they knew about this. They knew this Shohei Ohtani for a long time. And thankfully, the American audience is really starting to grasp just how different this guy is. His current teammates, They can't wait to watch him at Coors Field, which, by the way, he has shown that he loves it when the attention is on him. He's one of those people who seems to rise to the moment. And with those baseballs, they can't imagine where those baseballs are going to land later tonight.
So I know in actual games, Alden, Ohtani has been pretty much unparalleled in the majors in terms of the exit velocity of his home runs, the launch angle of his home runs. But this dynamic in the Derby with a handpicked pitcher and the need to build a chemistry and rapport because it's a timed competition, it's round-based, there's pressure in that way. How do you think that plays into what Ohtani's natural strengths are?
You know, it's interesting, Pablo. I'm not sure that it plays that much of a factor here. A man named Jason Brown, he's the Angels' bullpen catcher, is going to be the one who throws batting practice to Shohei Ohtani. And you're right, a lot of times for these derbies, the hitters are very selective about who throws to them. And not only that, more importantly, they're very selective about where they want to be pitched. They all have this sweet spot depending on their swing path, sometimes depending on the dimensions of the ballpark and where they want to get the ball to because it's more favorable to home runs.
Right.
Watching him this year, he has hit balls out in every which way, all over the strike zone, down near his shoe tops, over his head, way outside, way inside. He hits the ball just as hard to his pull side, which is right field, as he does to center field, as he does to left field. I gotta think that Jason Brown just needs to get the ball around the plate, and Shohei Ohtani will probably take care of the rest.
All right, Alden, after the break, I want to take a more macro look now at the season that Ohtani is having and how all of this is even happening.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Alden, I know that Joe Maddon has given Kevin Cash, the manager of the American League team, permission to use Ohtani as both a hitter and a pitcher in tomorrow night's All-Star game, which is, again, exactly what I want, what Major League Baseball wants, what I presume you want. But how do you see that happening in real time? What's that spectacle going to be like?
It's going to be really interesting, Pablo, because while Shohei Ohtani is in the lineup, and typically for these All-Star games, the starters get maybe two plate appearances. Shohei Ohtani is going to have to find a way to warm up. And he's going to come into the game as a reliever. And that's something that he's never really done. He has his typical pre-start routine. He's a very routine-oriented person. But I would think, and or maybe this is just me hoping, that at some point in between innings on Tuesday night, we're going to see Shohei Ohtani walk out to the bullpen at Coors Field. And I think that's going to be the coolest thing. Maybe he just hit a double, and maybe he's got some clay on his pants still. And Shohei Ohtani is going to jog to the dugout, he's going to get his glove, and he's going to march out to the bullpen because he's coming into the game as a reliever.
The baseball season, as we know, is a marathon. It is 162 games of often drudgery. And for a player like him to be doing this at the plate while also preparing to take the mound every fifth day, I still don't get the math on this, man. It's not really adding up in my mind. So how do his routines work?
He's just very detail-oriented, Pablo. Anybody that's around Shohei will tell you that. They've never seen anybody who's more prepared on any given day than Shohei Ohtani, who studies more than Shohei. He's just a baseball rat. I mean, it's basically anybody who's around him that can't really identify any other interests that he has other than that it's just baseball. There are concerns about him holding up doing this over the course of a full season. There's a reason why this has never been done. And the Angels use a six-man rotation. That helps. If he's a little bit extra sore on any given day, they'll give him an extra day. That helps as well. But what's been fascinating about this is that they're using him. Like, they're doing this. They are here for this. Joe Maddon is here for this. And, you know, I get a lot of complaints from people around baseball, and I'm sure you hear them as well, Pablo, that Shohei Ohtani is on a bad Angels team and that he's being wasted there and they're not going to go to the playoffs. And how could they not go to the playoffs with Shohei Ohtani? We're not going to see him in October.
Yes. No, that's the criticism, Alden, that the Angels are such a, you know, they're not even a mess. They're just so mediocre, big picture, that it feels like a waste of this guy's talent.
But let me give you sort of like galaxy brain here, right?
I'm always here for galaxy brain.
This is the perfect team for Shohei Ohtani because like they literally need him to do all of these things.
Yeah, wait, hold on. My eyeballs, my brain stem, it's all lit up like in that meme. Hold on, I love this. Keep going.
Think about all those times that we see Shohei Ohtani play right field. The reason why this is done is because he's going to come up to bat the next half inning in there. And Joe Maddon is basically thinking, I'm not wasting a Shohei Ohtani plate appearance. I need him to bat. So get out there in right field. Sometimes he's played two half innings in right field after starting a game. And so they basically tell him, look, if it's a close play, don't throw max effort home or anything. Just get the ball in as quickly as possible. Okay? And this is not a criticism. Like, I am here for this. Like, I love it. He hits the day before, the day after, the day of his starts. He is their best starting pitcher. It's not close. He's their best starting pitcher. He's their most talented starting pitcher by a wide margin. And Pablo, if he was on any other team, if he were on the Dodgers, right?
Yeah.
A team that was thought to be close to signing him back in the offseason heading into the 2018 season, they wouldn't use him like this. They don't need to use him like this. They wouldn't risk injury like this. The Angels need him to do this, and because he is on the Angels, we are able to witness the full scope of Shohei Ohtani.
The ringmaster of the circus, who you alluded to already, is also the perfect character, right? Because Joe Maddon, you know, he's the guy drinking wine in a post-game presser. He's the guy who is renowned as creative a brain in managing, in coaching in general, in sports maybe. How has Joe Maddon figured into this formula?
I think just like the Angels are an ideal team for him because of need, I think Joe Maddon is an ideal manager for him because of personality. One thing that Joe Maddon has proven throughout his career is he's not afraid to think differently. And he showed this especially when he was with the Tampa Bay Rays. People forget that Joe Maddon was always on the cutting edge of the analytical movement that was starting in Major League Baseball, that was starting to take hold.
We're going to go with the high leverage kind of thoughts with the matchup bullpen and see who may want to emerge out of that group.
He's sort of gone in the other direction since then, but he's never been afraid to be unconventional. And Shohei Ohtani is the type of athlete that demands creativity like that. He demands somebody who's not afraid to take risks.
Of course he needs to hit. He's that good. I think you need to figure out as often as you can get him to hit while you're not interfering with his arm recovery time. That's the key to figure out as far as I see it.
And I go back to his first start of the season on Sunday Night Baseball against the White Sox. He's in the lineup for the first time, and he throws four scoreless innings. He hits a home run his first time up to bat.
First pitch swinging.
Oh, and first pitch crushing! Oh, man! Lean into it!
And then we get into the fifth. And mind you, this is his first start of the year, a full season ahead of him. He hasn't pitched a lot in recent years. He starts getting into some trouble. It's a really close game. His pitch count is getting high. And I was sitting there in the press box. I was sitting right next to Buster Olney that day. And we were both wondering, when is Joe Maddon going to take this guy out?
And then finally, the last play, he's got to cover home.
Fletcher throws home. That's wide. Ohtani goes down at the plate. The White Sox score, but of much greater import is the health of Shohei Ohtani.
And everybody just sort of holds their breath, and they're thinking, oh no, here we go again. Now, Shohei Ohtani ended up being fine, but I think any other manager who would have gone through something like that, a scare like that with one of your best players, I think they would have maybe taken the foot off the gas pedal. And credit to Joe Maddon, who since then has not let up, who has not sort of gone away from what he declared at the beginning of the year, which was that he wanted to give Shohei Ohtani free reign over his own career. He wanted him to just go out there and play baseball, and if he wanted to do certain things, he was going to do them. And because he has managed him through that prism, he's gotten the most out of Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, I just want the record to show at this point in our podcast, Alden, that not only has Mike Trout, the modern-day Mickey Mantle, one of the greatest hitters we've ever seen, not only has that guy been reduced to a footnote, but Shohei Ohtani's pitching has been the undercard of an entire conversation about Shohei Ohtani. I mean, tell me where the hyperbole has to end, Alden. That's what I'm really getting at here, because we've seen the comparisons to Babe Ruth, but it feels like when you dig into those statistics and you see what Ruth actually did as a pitcher, Ruth never did this.
Yeah, if you can't find a comp with Babe Ruth, Pablo, you can't find a comp, period. People have brought up the question of, is this the greatest season of all time? And I can tell you that at this point, Shohei Ohtani is on pace for 9.8 Fangraphs WAR, which is amazing. It is a great season. It's not unprecedented. Mike Trout himself has a couple of 10 WAR seasons. But what I can tell you is that this is the most unique season in baseball history. And look, think back to, let's go to Babe Ruth, right? Babe Ruth basically had two seasons where he was a two-way player, okay? Those two seasons, which was 1918 and 1919, Pablo, he combined for those two seasons 40 home runs, 70 strikeouts, 13 stolen bases. Shohei Ohtani in the first half of one season, okay, has already surpassed the strikeout total, is right on the verge of surpassing the stolen base total, and is awfully close to that home run total. And keep in mind, Babe Ruth did this pre-integration.
Right.
Shohei Ohtani is doing this at a time where people are so highly specialized, where they have been sharpening very specific skill sets with the most advanced technology over a long period of time. No, baseball players have never been faster, stronger, better. There is no comp. Babe Ruth is no longer a suitable comp for Shohei Ohtani, and that means nobody is.
Now that the Babe is in our rearview mirror, Alden, and I think you're completely right on that. That was a level-headed take, although it feels like there should be flames coming out of it. I want to play a different kind of hypothetical game here. Let's just play the game of, what if Ohtani just hit? What kind of a season do you think we'd be watching right now?
I go back to a conversation that I had with Cole Calhoun. He played with Shohei Ohtani early in his major league career. And he asked me this question, which was, if Shohei Ohtani were a free agent today, how much money would he make? He thinks that Shohei Ohtani is basically a $25 million a year pitcher, and that he is basically a $25 million a year hitter. You're talking about a guy who, as we've mentioned, has near unprecedented power, has this really great feel in the batter's box, but also is a really great bad ball hitter, maybe to the level of a Vladimir Guerrero Sr. Mm. He's one of the fastest players in baseball. I mean, Pablo, he is on a team with Mike Trout. He definitely has more raw power than Mike Trout. He might be faster than Mike Trout. That's what we're talking about here. And he could play the outfield. I haven't seen much of it, but according to what Joe Maddon says he's a natural outfielder. That if he wanted to, if he didn't have so many demands elsewhere, he could be a pretty good right fielder. He obviously has the arm for it. If he were on a different team, I think it's very easy to see that Shohei Ohtani would be the everyday right fielder. And I wonder if on that team, a team with good starting pitching depth, obviously, he might be your everyday right fielder who sometimes comes out of the bullpen and maybe pitches in high leverage situations. Maybe he's a closer sometimes. Maybe he gets you out of like a really tough jam in the eighth inning. That's maybe the mold that Shohei Ohtani would fit somewhere else. And if we're being honest and if we're being a little bit pragmatic long term about his career, I hope that he could hold up as a two-way player like this for a long time. But if not, maybe that's more in the immediate future of Shohei, where you don't lose the pitching ability entirely, but maybe you temper down a little bit. He becomes maybe something of a high leverage reliever, which would be fun in and of itself, and which we might get a taste of during Tuesday's All-Star game.
So in terms of this trajectory that we're about to watch here, literal and figurative, how much left do you think there is for this guy to climb?
I think the appeal of Shohei is starting to really pick up. And the reason why I say this is I was at Angel Stadium last week when they were playing the Red Sox, and they were basically sold out for that series. And I'll give you an anecdote that might seem insignificant, but I thought was pretty telling. The Angels were giving away this Shohei Ohtani-themed pillow.
Hold on. I need to Google this. Shohei Ohtani pillow, Google search. Okay, hold on. I'm looking at this right now. Alden, it is six Ohtani faces, almost like he's in a boy band exclusively comprised of Shohei Ohtanis. It is multicolored. It is kind of like 60s mod-esque. It is the kind of thing that you kind of need to build your whole house around. Like, it fits with nothing else except for itself.
I was at the ballpark the day that they were giving these out, all right? The Angels only had 14,000 of them to give out. And I'm talking to somebody on the Angels who get to call from gate security. I was told that there were 200 to 300 people lined up at each gate waiting to get in just so they could get one of these pillows. They pushed 5,000 people through the door within the first 15 to 20 minutes or so. Instantly, when people started settling into their seats for the first time, these pillows were selling on eBay for as much as $80. That's where the popularity around Shohei Ohtani is at right now. It's getting to boy band level, like that pillow is sort of going for, in the United States. It's not just in Japan now. This was the case in Japan. It's starting to happen here in the United States too.
Alden Gonzalez, as always, thanks for hitting it out of the park with us on ESPN Daily.
Thank you, Pablo.
Okay, coming up, it has been an insanely big weekend in sports, and I want to go from leaving the yard to maybe never coming home.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Calling it a busy sports weekend might be a bit of an understatement. Because Leo Messi in Argentina finally won the Copa America on Saturday, and then Conor McGregor took an L later that night, and then Novak Djokovic won Wimbledon yesterday, and then the MLB draft happened, and then Game 3 of the NBA Finals tipped off last night, and in the middle of all of that chaos yesterday, we pulled Sam Borden out of a beer-soaked Wembley Stadium to tell us what he saw at the European Championship Final. Sam Borden, I was in pain watching that game. I wasn't even rooting for England, but that's how this thing unfolded. I am still kind of stressed out. So just explain what we saw on the pitch at Wembley Stadium today.
Yeah, I mean, Pablo, we saw, honestly, a command performance from Gianluigi Donnarumma, the goalkeeper for Italy. And we saw yet another massive disappointment in a long, long list of massive disappointments for English soccer fans. This one really close to home, literally at Wembley Stadium. I mean, you know, this was supposed to be their big moment, their first chance at a trophy since 1966 in the World Cup final. And they came agonizingly close and lost on penalties, which, if you're an English soccer fan, is something that you've kind of gotten used to over the years.
I'm so sorry to rub just more salt in the wound here, but this was supposed to be a homecoming. Here was England at home in front of a home crowd that had people. Sam, I saw a video of fans breaking in successfully into Wembley, like scrambling to get into this thing, and I understand why, but it turns out they scrambled to get their souls electrocuted in a penalty shootout. I mean, what was the atmosphere like around this building?
It was really remarkable. I mean, I've been very lucky. I mean, Pablo, you were in Brazil for the World Cup when Brazil, you know, was making its run. Like, that's, you know, as much the home of soccer as anywhere else. And it was intense there. But this was really something different. And I think that half century plus of hurt, you know, in a sport that English fans love more than anything, is really what sort of fueled it. That and probably like 4,000 beers per person. But, you know, it was an amazing atmosphere in and around the stadium. Like you said, a lot of fans who didn't have tickets trying to get in. And when England took the lead, you know, 2 minutes into the game, I think the place felt like it was going to explode. But honestly, I give Italy a lot of credit. They kind of came into the game in the second half. They got the, you know, equalizing goal. And frankly, they were the stronger team, in my opinion, for the, you know, the second half of the game and into extra time. So I wasn't stunned necessarily when it went into penalties that Italy came out on top. Like I said, Donnarumma had been an incredible performer for Italy throughout the tournament.
Sam, yeah. Like that kid, and I call him a kid because how old is he again?
I think he's like 12, honestly. He looks, he's like a giant, but I mean, this, it's amazing when you think about it, Pablo. Like, Italy can make gnocchi and like legendary goalkeepers. They just went straight from Buffon to Gianluigi Donnarumma, who's going to be their number one for, I don't know, another 30 years, it feels like.
Yeah, and he may get a statue before his retirement at this rate. I mean, I guess the question after penalties, Sam, and after a game like this, in fairness to England, is if you're a Brit, how do you apportion blame here, Sam? Because I want you to be rational. I want you to sort of provide counsel to people who obviously in this moment are still understandably very much in their feelings.
No, totally, totally. And I think, you know, you appreciate a play on words as much as I do, Pablo. So the Italian fans were definitely rubbing it in. To me, the greatest sign I saw was the one that an Italian fan was holding that said, "It's coming home," but he crossed out home. And now it said, "It's coming Rome," which I thought was just perfect. You know, in terms of blame for, you know, where the English fans want to go with it, like, honestly, there's not a lot to give, in my opinion. I think, you know, England has come a long way. You know, at the World Cup in Russia, they made a semifinal. Now they're in the final here. There's, by the way, a World Cup being played next year because this was a delayed tournament. So, like, the young players they have, you know, Raheem Sterling is an absolute star. You know, they Jordan Pickford played great tonight and kept them in it for, you know, much of the game. Phil Foden, Jack Grealish, they have a young team. They have exciting players, and that's not going to change. So, you know, it's brutal for them to lose this way. Gareth Southgate, you know, lost on penalties in 1996 as a player, and for him to lose as a manager here is just like, you know, the cruelest twist of fate. But I think, honestly, when English fans wake up, whenever that is, tomorrow, the next day, whenever the hangover lifts.
Take a long break, England. You've earned that much.
Yeah, exactly. I think they're going to take a look at their team and say, you know what? We're not in bad shape, and there's every chance that we'll be back with another crack at this in Qatar.
Yeah, I found myself watching that shootout through my fingers, Sam, feeling so bad for those young English players. Those missed kicks at the end, just one after the other, stonewalled by It turns out a kid who debuted at age 17, the youngest goalkeeper for the Italian national team ever, and who is 22 years old now. And so take me into the celebration for Italy. As the other end of the emotional spectrum goes, what did that look like? What did that feel like in London?
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, you know, there was a very small segment of the crowd that was Italian fans, but they made themselves heard for sure. And the Italian players ran right towards them in a line. They took like literally a couple of sort of like deep bows, like you would see, you know, at the end of a performance. And that's really what it was, honestly. I mean, the Italian team, we talked about this before the opening match, Pablo. You remember, like, they felt a certain destiny here. They had that opening match in Rome. And from that match forward, they felt as though they were the team in the tournament, and they lost important players. They lost Spinazzola, who was maybe their best player, and they just kind of went right through it. Even tonight, they lost Chiesa in the middle of the game, and he had been the dominant player, yes, in my opinion. And he went out, and they just kind of kept on rolling. And so, you know, one of the things that I really liked is kind of a little detail. You know, in the end, it's probably not a huge thing, but after the game was over, probably about a half hour after the game was done, several of the Italian players went out with scissors and cut a hole in the net at Wembley in front of the Italian fans, where scored their
NCAA tournament style, Final Four style.
Exactly. It was just like the NCAA tournament. It was the goal in front of where their fans at that end. And several players went out there and cut big, giant pieces. And so as I walked out of the stadium tonight, I looked back and literally half the net was missing in one of the goals at Wembley. And it was because the Italian players were taking souvenirs home with them to remember this tournament forever.
So, Sam, look, it's not coming home. We know that now officially. But the good news is that you are almost done with your tour of service. And I'm going to miss your Instagram posts. I'm going to miss your culinary regimen. But hey, man, safe travels. I look forward to you coming back stateside. And I think at this point, like, I think you should buy me dinner after all of the salivating I've done from afar.
Absolutely, Pablo. Anytime.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.